usually land within the first month, at least one or two interviews, and that includes onboarding the client in that month. So we quickly see a return if we add in things like podcasts.
This is the Business Storytelling Show with Christoph Trapp. Name a top 20 storytelling podcast and a top 5% podcast globally. Christoph chats with thought leaders and experts to share tips and tricks that can help you tell your company's stories better to drive business results. Available wherever you listen to podcasts, live streamed on major social media channels, and part of the DB&A television network, available on most U.S. television sets and streaming on Roku and Amazon Fire. Here's Christoph with today's episode. Let's go.
Let's go, business storytellers. How's everyone doing? Hey, today we want to talk about how to stay patient, and specifically how to stay patient in public relations. And what's interesting to me when it comes to being patient, I'm not patient. So, you know, and I don't know, maybe I'm just too black and white, right? But I either want to do it right now or it's going to wait for a while. So maybe that's being patient, or maybe there's a middle ground. I don't know. But when it comes to PR, certainly it's a long game, just like content strategy is and content marketing is. But how do we find that right balance to be the right amount of patient and not just be waiting forever and ever and ever? Hope is eternal, right? We will just wait until something happens. So today, to talk about that topic, I'm joined by Michelle Glogovac. She's an award-winning publicist, the podcast matchmaker, and I'm glad to have her on the show today. Michelle, welcome. Glad to see you today. So tell us about, why is it so difficult to be patient when it comes to PR, or is that just me?
I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said that you're not patient. Patience is a virtue. And I, for one, am also not a patient person per se. But what I have to work with my clients is that, like you said, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And so you do have to be patient. Unless it's breaking news that is going to change tomorrow, tonight, you have to be patient to get your story out there, to make sure that it's the right time, that you've hit the right journalist. It's all about waiting, really. You know, it's the long game. It's making sure that your follow-ups are there, but they're not annoying. And you have to hit just at that perfect sweet spot where the journalist is going to be working on exactly what you're talking about. And in some cases, whether it's podcasts or news, that could take months, but in other cases it could be overnight. So it just really depends on what it is you're pitching, you know, where your story is and how relevant it is to the here and now.
You know, it's so interesting because the timing does matter. And I mean, when I worked as a journalist in a previous life, I would get pitches after I wrote a story, right? I'm like, oh, did you know about this viewpoint? And back then it was print only. So we're not going to reprint the newspaper because somebody has an additional quote. On the web, certainly in theory, I could update an article, even though my perception is that very few journalists ever do that, right? Once it's published, unless there's a correction or, you know, something like that. But that's a whole different topic, I guess. How should you update your articles? But how do you figure out what the right timing is, or are you just guessing?
Well, you know, I think it depends on what the topic is. I have clients that speak on things that are happening right now. I have a client who's speaking on the Iran protests and is a native of Iran who is here in America. So that's breaking news. That's going on right now. We're looking at journalists who are covering the stories, covering the protests. And those would be the ones that we want to hit right now. But then there's others that, you know, you just need to do your research. And this is all part of the media list building of seeing what have they covered? What are the topics that they really focus on? And that's how you're going to know who you should be talking to, whether that's going to be something that hits right now. I have a client who's launching a plus size kid fashion line that's all athleisure wear. And we've been pitching her story, but Disney came out with their shorts recently and they focus on a ballerina who's a plus size. She's looking in the mirror and all kinds of reviews came out with this Disney short. And I had reached out to a journalist who covered it and was, you know, very positive in her coverage of the story. And I said, this really relates to my client because this is what she's doing. She's trying to have this positive impact. And Disney, you know, putting that out there is really great. And I tied the two together. And that was one of those overnight things that the next day she said, yes, I pitched this story to my editors. We want to do a full interview. And that one is snowballed. But it's not always right now. I had a podcast that I actually pitched back in January of 2022 and followed up in February. And it wasn't until November of 2022 that they actually came back and said, yes, we want your client to be interviewed on our show. And so that's why it can take months, literally months, to land that interview or that feature. It's not necessarily always overnight. And you know, when I go back to the client with the fashion line, it wasn't, this one was overnight, but we've been pitching for months to get something big like this. So sometimes it appears to happen overnight, and yet there's been a lot of work and foundation that's been laid up to that point.
I mean, nothing really ever happens overnight anymore anyways, but, or if it even ever did. But what's interesting about the whole pitching things and the timing, you know, like when I published a book or, you know, something new launched, and I'm pitching things, I have to line them up with when everything actually comes out, right? So if I'm publishing a book in March, I can't start pitching in January. I probably have to start pitching way earlier than that, especially for podcasts, because I mean, I've been on podcasts, they have like a 5-month lead period, right? It takes them 5 months to publish an episode because they're so far ahead. So that's certainly difficult sometimes to figure out. But tell me, why is it worth to even put all this effort into it? I mean, you certainly have some camps out there. You see it on the content marketing side. They say, oh, content marketing is great, whatever, you know, it works and we're in support of it and we see the long-term value. But a lot of times it doesn't necessarily, it's not as easy to measure as a salesperson selling something, right? The salesperson sold something. You can see they sold that one thing, but the whole picture isn't there necessarily. How does PR fit in? Why is it worth doing?
Well, it's a great point that you make of it is hard to measure in certain terms. You know, you can look at how many clicks an article received, how many shares it received, and look at it that way. There's different calculations for comparing it to if you would have paid for an ad instead of doing PR, you know, what is that correlation in how much you would have had to spend? But to really find the value in PR, it's to make sure that you know who your target audience is and to look at the outlets, the podcasts that you're reaching, and to ensure that they align. Because once they align and your audiences are, you know, similar, then you're reaching the people who are going to buy your book, who are going to look for your services, who want to hear more from you and your thought leadership and all of those different points. So it's really a matter of finding who it is that you want to target, making sure that all aligns, and then taking the content of whatever you've done, whether it's an article, a podcast, and creating more marketing material out of that. I love to repurpose content. Podcasts are the perfect channel for that because you can use the one interview like we're doing right now, and I can take this and share it across my platforms. I can pull different clips of the audio and use that, the video. I can create a blog post out of it. I can create quotes that then turn into graphics for social media. So it's a constant repurposing of one piece of of the PR material that you've already done and to share it. And the more you share it, the more visible you become. And the more visible you are, then, you know, the more well-known you are. And then people will know you as you'll be a household name and they'll want to work with you. They become familiar with you. It's more about that and creating a relationship with the audience, whoever it is, whether they're reading or listening. And that's how you're going to start to see the return on your investment.
Yeah. And, you know, so let's talk briefly about what it actually takes. So if I mean, being patient is one thing, right? I mean, I'm very patient to lose some weight here anytime now, Michelle, but my diet hasn't changed, right? And I think I can be very patient and it's not going to happen because I haven't done the right thing. What does the right thing look like in, you know, pitching and actually getting people to pay attention to you. I mean, I'm just, you know, back in my day as a journalist, I got some of the worst news releases, I mean, or press releases or media, whatever we want to call them. And it was just horrible. It's like, I don't have time to read this. The timing is horrible. You know, the format is horrible. So what does it actually take to, so let's assume we have to be patient and we're all on board, but what's the right strategy for that patience to actually pay off?
Well, and as a podcast host myself, I get these horrific pitches as well. And it makes me cringe because these are people who are paid to do this. And there's someone out there depending on them to get coverage. So what it takes is, A, you want to be personal. I make sure that every time I pitch a journalist, a podcast host, that I connect with them on a personal level. I let them know that I have listened to your show. I have read your content. I know who you are. I like to say that I'm a stalker, and I will look at your website. I will look at your social media. I will connect with you on a human level so that it's not a copy and paste. I think that's the biggest mistake that a publicist can make, is to simply copy and paste, throw spaghetti at the wall, hope and pray that it'll hit somebody's desk and they go, yep, we'll take it. Versus spending that time to do the proper research to make sure that this is the person who's going to cover the story, who it's in their, you know, their realm of specialty of what they do cover, that you personalize it to let them know that this isn't just a spray and pray, that I hope to get it done. And then to really tell the story of the client, of yourself. Don't make it a sales pitch. I think that's, it's gross to just sell yourself. You know, we all know, nobody's stupid, that if you have a book, you want to sell your book. That's the whole point of having the book, right? If you are a coach, you want to sell your services. We all understand that there is something behind why you're doing what you're doing to get out there. The point is that you want to share your story, your knowledge. You want to help others benefit from hearing from you versus just coming on to do a sales pitch. Nobody likes the used car salesman. And I feel really bad for the used car salesman, because this is, you know, the reputation that they have is that it comes off slimy and sleazy. And I think when a pitch is all about the sale and not about the story, that's where a publicist goes wrong. And it doesn't matter if we're talking about a digital outlet, a newspaper, or a podcast. It needs to be about the story and about how you're going to share your knowledge. Why is it that people need to hear from you? And it's connecting on that human level, both in the pitch and then in the interview as well. And that's really how it comes together, how being patient, to know that the journalist, the host, has other stuff going on as well. I think that's something that people also forget, especially on the podcast side, is that most hosts, this is not a full-time job. They've got full-time jobs on top of, you know, lives and families and personal things going on. So they're not pining away, sitting at their computer, hoping to get a guest pitch for their show. They have other things going on. So to follow up with them so urgently within 24 hours, 48 hours, it's happened to me, it's just going to be an automatic no, because you're not giving them the benefit of the doubt. You're not relating on that human level of, this isn't a priority. Your story may have, you know, be a priority to you. It should be, but you need to give time and have patience on allowing people to read through the pitch, to get back to you. And in the follow-up, don't be annoying. You know, give them grace that I'm just checking in one more time. Not, I'm bumping this to the top of your inbox. We know that it bumps to the top of the inbox. So to really just connect on that human level to, and I hate this word, but to be authentic, just to be real. Don't be someone else. Don't be the salesy person. Tell the story. And I think in telling the story in the pitch and in the interview, that's really what makes or breaks it.
I think what's also interesting is it's good to understand what people's processes are, right? So I'll give you my process. For example, to book people on the show, if I have a guest like you and I reached out to you, and I think so, yes. Unless you were stalking me and I reached out after I noticed that. But either way, in my opinion, I reached out to you and, you know, found you somewhere on the web. And then I have a process, and everyone, like, this is the process. Here's the form, and it's not a long form, but we do have to find the time and date, right? We're recording and we're live streaming at certain times and dates, like the end. It's it could be negotiable if you're like in Singapore or something, because this is a horrible time for Singapore, for example. But in general, for North America, these are the times we're recording. This is the process. Here's the disclaimers. Here's the agreements, right? Like you have to have a microphone and a camera and whatever. That's all in there. And every once in a while, I have people write back. It doesn't happen that often, but they want me to use their process, right? Because they have a process on how to do a podcast. And I'm like, I'm just not participating. Like, this is the process, and this is the process we use. Now, if you want to brainstorm on questions, for example, I'm happy to do that to an extent. But this is the process we use and the end of it. Now, when I get pitches, automatically, Michelle, a template gets sent back to those people. And I offer them a sponsored guest appearance, right? It's basically the same thing. We still talk about something I think the listeners will find interesting. But I go back and do that. And my philosophy is they get paid, right, to pitch me. Why don't I get paid? And my rates are really, really low when you look at the Analytica report. But how do you feel about that kind of arrangement? Is that just a hard no, or is it worth considering, or what do you think about that?
I veer on the side of telling clients not to pay for interviews, simply because then it's, to me, it's not earned media. Paying for the spot is basically advertising, you know, and I'm paid by clients because I'm doing all of this research. I have relationships. And so that's why I'm pitching. I definitely agree with you on the fact that nobody should come on your show and try to dictate how it's run, what the process is. The show is your home. And to me, you're welcoming guests into your home. So I'm not going to come in and say, you put the dishes in the dishwasher the wrong way, or this is how you need to prepare my food. This is your home. This is how you do things, how you run things. And as a guest, it's just pure respect to follow your rules and to do whatever process it is that you have in place. I think that there's a plethora of guests. So you know, if they're willing to pay for it, go for it. But from my end and with my clients, unless it's something that is, you know, small enough that we can warrant it. I do have one client in particular who we will occasionally do ad spots and sponsor a show because the amounts are small. But otherwise, we focus really on earned media and making sure that we aren't paying for the spots. Because, you know, we see this in Forbes right now all the time, that people pay to be in Forbes. They pay for certain titles of, you know, being a council member and for writing for them. And it just doesn't have the worthiness behind it that it used to when you would just be a source or get to write for them.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, in my system is on the sponsored side, it's not black and white. If I know them, right, I might say, oh yeah, come on. Or if I've just read their book, for example, that has actually happened, or, you know, something like that. Or if I don't have 30 guests lined up, right, I might invite them on. But certainly it's an easier decision when you have, you know, that many guests already on deck. Now, you talked about relationships, and of course, relationships matter. But what's interesting to me about that, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, especially in journalism and maybe anywhere in North American culture, right? People come and go all the time. And I mean, even I saw it in nonprofits, right? When nonprofits have older donors, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have to build relationships with the younger donors because, you know, at some point the older donors won't be around anymore. How do you build relationships when people move around, when people, you know, stay in roles for a relatively short amount of time period? I actually just had somebody tell me that the other day. They said, you know what, the reporters in the area today, you can't even build a relationship with them. You talk to them one time, and the next time you see somebody from that station or paper, they're not even there anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely hard, especially right now. We're seeing so many layoffs with so many different journalism companies. And to me, it's the key to really keep the relationship with the person. I'm a big Twitter person. So I build a relationship and a rapport on Twitter. Sometimes it's on Instagram. And I do it before I need to have a relationship. I will do it before a pitch goes out so they become familiar with me too. And I make it so that it's not just about me wanting something. I relate all of my pitching and this entire process, again, to like coming to dinner at your home. You know, I want to build that relationship before I need to depend on it. It's everything is reciprocal. If someone's looking for a source and it's not my client that's going to be the good fit, but I know someone else, I'll send that to them. So it's not always a take, take, take. I love a give and take, a reciprocal relationship. And I think that's important because, you know, wherever they end up going, chances are they have a specialty in what they're covering. And so you can still continue that relationship wherever they're going. It's important to, you know, have the relationships across the board, where whether it's local now, you know, and maybe they become national later on, that's always possible as well. So I say continue the relationships with the individuals and you will find the spots that you need to, depending on, you know, which outlet it is in the end, but do it before you need it.
That's always a good tip. And, you know, just a friendly reminder, we do live stream with Restream and you can see the link on the screen there. I think it's 10%, maybe $10, something like that. There is a discount if you sign up right there, if you want to live stream and record your podcast or do Amazon live videos or shopping videos. They do that as well. Now, very, very cool new feature. I think the one question maybe we didn't get to, and that was like the first thing I mentioned in my little monologue though earlier, is how patient do I actually have to be? And I know in content marketing, we throw around the 6 to 9 months if you do it correctly. And you know what? I've seen it move faster than 6 months and I've seen it move slower than 9 months. So, you know, I think 6 to 12 months is probably a good ballpark. But like, how patient do I have to be when it comes to PR?
I think 6 to 12 months is a great amount of time. And that's why all of my contracts are 6 to 12 months to start. But what I would also say is that I love to sprinkle in podcasts because they are much quicker. You don't have to be as patient. And I usually land within the first month, at least one or two interviews. And that includes onboarding the client in that month. So we quickly see a return if we add in things like podcasts. I know that you had mentioned that some have like a 5 month waiting period and there are some that take a long time. I said that I had the one client that I pitched in January and we didn't get to it until November, but there are other shows that are recording within the month, you know? So I think that having that ability to have quicker wins is something that's great to also have to build your media kit, to build on your press page for your website of where you've been and that you are already talking about your story. And then you should be waiting that 6 to 12 months to be patient, to be getting something that's even bigger. So I think if you do a combination strategy, then you don't have to be as patient and it might help with being patient for that 6 to 12 months.
You know, what's interesting to me too is 6 to 12 months is it's really not that long. I think the problem people run into, that we're so focused on the quarter, right? Like this is the quarter we're currently in. What are we doing this quarter? And if you think about it, 6 months, that's just 2 quarters down the road. And 12 months, I mean, that's a year down the road. That's really not that long if you think about it. When you pitch, how formal should things be? I mean, I've made pitches that were not formal at all. They were just like, hey, I was just doing this and I thought of these three things and I thought they might be of interest. Would you be interested in one of them? And they said, can we have them all three? Can we have all three of them? You know, but it wasn't a formal pitch. It was just like me emailing kind of like a friend, even though I didn't know them. But how formal does it have to be?
I'm not big on formalities. I will never use a Mr. or a Ms. or a Mrs. in my emails. I won't say, hey, but I, you know, hey, good morning. That kind of a thing. And like I said, on the personal level, that's where I become less formal, where I share of myself. The one client that I was talking about earlier with the Disney short, my pitch was actually, hey, just so you know, I was scrolling on Instagram last night on the couch and I came across your article and your review. And so I just wanted to reach out because this is what it meant for my client. And related on that kind of a level. So it was completely impersonal, but yet we connected on that personal level. So not formal. I'm not about being majorly formal because I think that that's not who I am. That's not how I would talk normally. So I would say just be yourself, that kind of a thing, and don't formalize it. Don't put pressure on it.
Just be yourself and don't overdo it. Don't overthink it. Be a person. Sounds easier. Easier said than done. Michelle, really appreciate you coming on. I know we had your website up here most of the time, themlgcollective.com. In the last 20 seconds here or so, tell us, how do people connect with you? I mean, why should people connect with you? Who are your perfect clients? And, you know, how can you help them?
My job is to change the world one voice at a time through podcast interviews. So anyone who's wanting to change the world with their story, politicians, advocates, activists, authors, entrepreneurs, we should definitely connect and work together to create your unique speaking topics and get that message out to people. You can reach me on my website, themlgcollective.com. And I'm also very active on Twitter, Mick Glogovac, M-I-C, and on Instagram, Michelle Glogovac.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review our show on your favorite podcast channels. And don't forget to share this episode with your networks. We appreciate you. Until next time, let the best stories win.